Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Rob Provost, and he'll be answering your most important questions on bonefish in Hawaii. The show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you want to ask Rob a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure to sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is property of the Knowledge Group, Inc. Doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Rob Provost about bonefish in Hawaii. Have you heard about the contest we're running now through the end of June? Well, if you haven't, you're hearing about it now. We have three great prizes, first, second, and third place. First place prize is a pair of Adams Built, the Guide Weld Wader, at a retail price of $319.95. Then we have a second place prize, which is a Steve Rajeff Echo Edge 594-piece fly rod, 9-foot, 5-weight, retail price of $229.99. And then our third place prize is a pair of Corker Metal Head Boots, retail price of $159.99. You can get more details on these prizes and how to participate by clicking on the banner at the top of our homepage. But here's the basics. All you have to do is refer your friends, relatives, or customers to askaboutflyfishing.com. The three people that have the most referrals win the top three prizes. Now, before you run off and start referring people, you need to become one of our affiliates so that we can track your referrals. It doesn't cost you anything, and in fact, you may even make some money at it even if you don't win. So get involved today. Again, you can get more details on the prizes and how to participate by clicking on the banner at the top of our homepage. Click on that. You'll get all the details, follow the instructions. If you have any questions, you can always email me or give me a call. And after checking just before the show, it looks like Scott Hood is in first place at this point in the contest. Larry Hull is in second place. And third place is still up for grabs. So get involved. It may only take a few people to win the prize. So get out there, refer your friends and relatives and clients, and see if you can't win one of those prizes. Well, before we introduce Rob, we'd like to let you know about other great gifts we have to give away tonight. And for our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. And if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Rob's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $20 gift certificate for Front Range Anglers. And they're located on the web, www.frontrangeanglers.com. The gift certificate can be redeemed in their store or on their online store, either way. And here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something we talk about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win that $20 gift certificate. Well, tonight our guest is Rob Provost. Rob is the founder and owner of Grand Slam Fly Fishing Destinations, with well over 20 years of fly fishing experience ranging from New England to New Zealand. Rob has been fly fishing in saltwater, most notably Hawaii and the Caribbean, for almost a decade. He was the featured guest on the 2004 episode of Hawaii Sportsman TV entitled Bones on the Fly, where he was one of the very first to introduce locals and the business and vacation travelers alike in the pursuit of Hawaiian bonefish on the fly. Rob also appeared on an episode of Fly Fishing the World entitled Hawaiian Bonefish and Peacock Bass with host Conway Bowman. Rob and Conway fished for bonefish on the fly in the islands of Oahu and Molokai and peacock bass and smallmouth bass in Lake Wilson, a freshwater reservoir on Oahu. He is a lifetime member of Trout Unlimited, regularly gives educational presentations on fly fishing in Alaska, Hawaii, New Zealand, and other world-renowned destinations. His most recent presentation, entitled Bonefish in Paradise, Fly Fishing for Bonefish in the Hawaiian Islands, can be seen in destination theaters at select venues of the Fly Fishing Show and also upon request. Rob is the president of his local Trout Unlimited chapter and volunteer for Project Healing Waters Fly Fishing and Casting for Recovery. Rob's company, Grand Slam Fly Fishing Destinations, also provides guided fly fishing trips for bonefish, trevally, and rainbow trout on the islands of Kauai, and also hosts trips to Alaska, California, Louisiana, the Bahamas, Belize, Brazil, and New Zealand. Well, Rob, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Roger, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great. This is the first show we've ever done on Hawaii, so it's all new to me and my audience, and it's going to be fun talking about it. And it was funny because we'll get to one of the questions here, but somebody just came back from Hawaii, and then, my gosh, I just came back, and now you're talking about it. So I think a lot of people aren't aware of the fly fishing opportunities in Hawaii, so hopefully we can educate them tonight and let them know what's out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a lot to talk about. Yeah, that story about somebody just returning from Hawaii is not all that uncommon, actually. I get a lot of people that contact me and say, hey, I was over on the Hawaiian Islands. I gave bone fishing a try. It was terrible. Tell me about it. You know, you've got to have some secrets. And the first thing I tell them is, you know, you really need to become aware of the fact that there are folks over there guiding, and they will really help you with that steep learning curve when you first get on the flats. It's often the case in most of the fishing endeavors when you're going to try out some new type of fishing or a new venue. So I hope we can, you know, uncover some of the mysteries for these folks that are going to be thinking about heading to the Hawaiian Islands, and I look forward to answering their questions.
Great, great. Yeah, I think, and always, you know, of course, probably the majority of our listening audience are trout fly fishers, and many of us, like for me, I live in the Rocky Mountains, but we go to the Salt, and we look out over the ocean, and a little daunting, you know. It's just, it's not like that local stream where you know where all the lies are and you know how to fish it. It's just like, wow, where do I begin? So,
I'm born and raised in Massachusetts. So my dad taught me trout fishing at an early age. I can remember going to Vermont and visiting Orvis once a year, you know, the headquarters up there in Manchester. And so for the longest time, I was a trout fisherman. And I went into the Air Force and was fortunate enough to be stationed in Hawaii on the island of Oahu, and actually was at a Trout Unlimited meeting. People are often surprised to hear that there's a Trout Unlimited chapter in Hawaii, but there is, and at a Trout Unlimited meeting, was talking to some folks there, and at that time there was a very small season for the trout that are on the island of Kauai, and I said, well, what do we do the other 11 and a half months or 11 months of the year? And they said, hey, have you taken up saltwater fly fishing? And that's where it all started for me just a little over 10 years ago.
Wow, that's great. Well, let's talk about the bonefish. Are the bonefish in Hawaii the same species that exist in the Caribbean or other parts of the world?
They are not. There's actually two distinct species, Pacific bonefish, that are around the Hawaiian Islands. And there are some folks that are doing some great research along with Bonefish and Tarpon Trust. And most people hear about the research that's being done in and around the Florida Keys and the Bahamas and Belize and the Caribbean. And there are three, I believe, distinct species right now that are known in the Caribbean and the Atlantic Ocean. There are actually two distinct different species, and they're referred to as the sharp-nosed or pointed jaw. If you actually flip the bonefish over on its back before you release it, you can look at its jaw, and you can see if it's a rounded jaw or a pointed jaw. And all that the differentiation is between those two species is one of those species likes to spend a little bit more time up on the flats, and the other species spends a lot more of its time in deeper water and deeper channels. The good thing about Hawaii, and as we get to talk to some more detail about where and which Hawaiian islands you can fish for these two species, both of those habitats exist on several of the islands. So you've got a chance to catch both species, and they're both fantastic to pursue.
Now, are those the same species that you'd find in other Pacific islands like Christmas Island or like that?
Yeah. Yes, they are. Yep.
So I saw some pretty big bonefish in pictures out on your website and other websites. What's the average size of bonefish in Hawaii, and how big do they get there? What's the
term? Right, and you'll find different websites that will tout different numbers. I've been fishing for bonefish in the Hawaiian Islands for 10 years, and I've caught less than a couple handfuls of bonefish under 4 pounds. So I tell people a good slot to really expect that you're going to catch a bonefish in this size is somewhere between 4 and 8 pounds. There are certainly plenty of pictures out there, and I've caught plenty of bonefish over 10 pounds. And then there are bonefish, and we've seen them in the waters there, whether we can stop them with a fly rod or not before they take all of our backing. We've seen bonefish that certainly are up in the class of the world record sizes, and we can talk about that. But for the most part, the fish that are coming up on the flats where you're going to be able to get to them, you know, smaller than like a 3-pound bonefish, that's very uncommon to catch something that small, and not uncommon to catch them in the 8, 7, 8, 9, 10-pound range. people ask me, why don't we catch, you know, 1.5 and 2 pound bonefish? Often you see schools in the Bahamas where there's 150 fish in a school and you're pulling out 1.5 and 2.5 pound bonefish. And I think it's just the mentality of the bonefish in the Hawaiian Islands, because all of the islands drop off into deeper water. For security, those bonefish are pooling up, they're schooling up, I should say, in deeper water and in areas where they can be in that large school for protection. So they're not coming up in large numbers, the smaller fish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I would say a 4 to 8 pound bonefish is a good size to be thinking you're going to target.
Okay. Now, we got a question from Frank in British Columbia. And he says, I'm aware of fishing on Oahu. What other islands can one go to and reasonably expect to at least see bonefish to cast to?
Right, right, right. This is a question I get all the time. You know, there are 7 inhabited Hawaiian islands, or the major Hawaiian islands. And, you know, being the most isolated population, you know, in the Pacific Ocean or in the West there, the bonefish are all around all of the islands there, obviously. But the question is, where can I get to those bonefish, either through wading or via inshore fishing from a boat? And I personally have ranked the islands Oahu first, Kauai second, Molokai third. I get a lot of questions about the Big Island, and I get a lot of questions about Maui. Actually, after Oahu, obviously, Maui and Kauai are the most visited islands, and then the Big Island kind of comes in fourth. And the thing with the this is my own personal perception of the shorelines there, but because they were volcanic, very active volcanically, both Maui and the Big Island, there are not any slow, shallow flats to wade out into. There's rocky shoreline, there's sandy beaches, black sand beaches and things like that, but they drop off very steeply, 10, 20, 30 feet off the shoreline. And so it's not conducive to wade fishing. And frankly, the islands of Maui and the Big Island just do not have a large enough economic calling to have a bunch of inshore fishermen with boats that are going to take you out and cruise the coastline to fish for bonefish or trevally. Those two islands and Oahu are big deep-sea fishing hubs, and so they've got a huge marina with deep-sea fishermen, but just a very, very few, if any, boats that are willing to even go inshore. So the answer to Frank's question, I guess, would be Oahu, Kauai, and Molokai to a lesser degree. Those three islands have a lot of fishable flats that you can get to bonefish.
And so on the Big Island, and you said the Big Island and Maui are the two that are least frequented for inshore fishing?
Yeah, there's bulletin boards. Folks are on the bulletin boards out there. I've got personal reports from people. The guides will talk amongst themselves, and locals on both Maui and the Big Island and vacationers there will talk about being on the coastline and seeing bonefish or thinking they might see bonefish or trevally cruising near the shoreline. But very rarely do they even have a fly rod with them or a spinning rod. And
sure.
They're just not – it's not worth the time to spend pursuing them, because it is so difficult to find a spot to get into the water, to have a chance to wade. You got to be really careful when you're on the rocks, rocky shoreline. The tide does change. You don't want to be there with your back to the swell. So it's just something that both the Big Island and the island of Maui, people have seen bonefish and locals have caught bonefish there. I won't tell you they haven't, but it's just very infrequent compared to Oahu. By far, has the most fishing habitat and the most fishing going on, and then Kauai is a close second.
Now, does that mean there might be some really big bonefish on the Big Island or Maui? I mean,
absolutely,
because it's not fished, you know?
Well, there's some great research that was done by, again, Bonefish Tarpon Trust, and the Hawaiian name for bonefish is OEO, O-I apostrophe O, and there's Hawaiian names for virtually all of the saltwater fish we're going to talk about. But so there's something called the OEO Tagging Project that's been going on for several years, and it's research that's tied into research that Bonefish and Tarpon Trust is doing, and they have actually solicited local anglers and other conservation-focused individuals to actually tag bonefish. Those fish are re-caught There's a lot of information collected on that. And there are fish migrating between the islands. We know that for a fact. There are some pretty large bonefish that have been caught on Oahu, tagged, released, and then the one example I know, and it's about 3 or 4 years old worth of data, but it was caught 609 days later, 47 miles across the channel over to the island of Molokai, and it was re-caught over there. So there are some big fish migrating between the islands, no doubt about it.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill in San Carlos, California, asks, he asked about the best islands, but he also asked about the best time of year to pursue them. Is this year-round good bone fishing, or is there migration where they're not around?
No, it's the best thing about Hawaii is it's a year-round fishery. Now, what I tell people is, as you go through the year in any location, but certainly Hawaii, and a lot of people that visit the island say, if you don't like the weather, just wait 15 minutes. That's kind of an old cliche, but it certainly applies to Hawaii. You could have a partly cloudy sky. Those will blow through. You could have a light rain shower. That'll be gone, et cetera, et cetera.
Sounds like the Keys.
Much like the Keys. Absolutely. So, January, February, and even into the first part of March is certainly known as the rainy season over there. So there are the chance of there being some days of rain, but just as equally as you could have one day of rain the next day or later on that afternoon, could be dry and sunny and crystal clear blue skies. I think there was also another question I often get is, well, what time would you go if you could pick any time of the year to go? And, kind of the April, May time frame, March, April, May, or September, October, November, it's kind of spring and fall. That tends to be less intense in terms of the strength of the wind and or the opportunity or the amount of rain and or partially to fully cloudy skies that you'll get. So, but it's a year-round fishery. We catch big fish all year round. We catch numbers of fish every month of the year, and then, and it rolls on through the entire year. So people call me and say, is this a good time to fish? And I say, absolutely. And that's not just a line to get you to come book a trip. It's really good fishing year round.
Question from Bob in Duncan, Oklahoma. He's multi-part, but we've answered most of his questions. But one of his questions was, where's the best drive-up hike-in bone fishing? So if a guy is going to do it himself and he doesn't have a boat, are there opportunities for that kind of fishing?
There are. Oahu, again, is Oahu has the most discrete different number of flats on it, and they're on different parts of the island. You can fish from out east of Diamond Head, and if people are familiar with the island of Oahu, there's a marine preserve out there called Hanama Bay. You can fish from east of that all the way through past Waikiki, the Air Force Base, and the entrance to Pearl Harbor to the southwestern shore of the south side of the island. And then you can fish what's called the North Shore, and a lot of people think of the North Shore as the pipeline and the surfing way to the direct north, but the whole northeast shore from what's called the towns of Kailua and Kaneohe, and there's actually a bay and a sandbar out there you can fish off of. From there all the way up past Turtle Bay and into the surfing area, there's flats all along that stretch of the island. So I like to tell people that Oahu is almost encircled on all sides by flats. And what's great about that is that you can plan your day based on looking at the tides, looking at the direction of the wind, and there's two major mountain ranges on Oahu. So if it's cloudy and rainy on the North Shore, the one mountain range that cuts that and divides it from downtown Honolulu and Waikiki, it could be sunny and beautiful down there and maybe very low winds. So you can tailor your day based on the weather and the tides, and you have multiple options. Now, in contrast, the island of Molokai has flats only on the south-facing shore of the island. Mm-hmm. 22 miles of them, broken up by a bunch of channels and some deeper water. But if anybody's ever been to the island of Molokai and even the island of Kauai, both of those islands on their north shore are known for their steep sea cliffs, things that you saw in various movies and stuff like that, opening scenes to the different movies will be shot on the North Shore, and there's not always roads that will pass across the north shore of either of those two islands. So there's no fishing on the north shore of either Molokai or Kauai. Now, on Kauai, there are some flats up near Princeville in the town on the north, direct north, and there are also some flats all the way over to the east side where the airport is in the island, the town of Kapa'a. So to answer Bob's question, you know, hiking and drive-up fishing is probably more prevalent on the island of Oahu, but there is some good opportunities also on both Kauai and Molokai. They're just restricted by what parts of the island they're on.
Okay, okay. Rob, we need to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we'll dig into fly fishing for bonefish in Hawaii a bit more, so stick with us, folks. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado, located conveniently on U.S. 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or you can call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rob Provo about bonefish in Hawaii. If you'd like to ask Rob a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. Receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Rob, at this point in the show, I always ask my guests, you know, what's going on in their fly fishing world. So tell us what you're up to, and tell us a bit about your business.
Sure. Well, Roger, I started my company about 5 or 6 years ago, at first part-time before I fully retired from the United States Air Force. And I named it Grand Slam Fly Fishing because, as I mentioned to you in the first segment, I grew up as a trout fisherman, and I love fishing for all species of trout. And I was also familiar with the saltwater Grand Slam, and I had just begun doing some saltwater fly fishing, got exposed to saltwater fly fishing, first bonefish, and then have had the opportunity to fish for permit and tarpon and snook, and not only those fish that make up the saltwater Grand Slam, but so what I did is I put together a business that focuses on planning and hosting guided fly fishing trips around the world to both freshwater and saltwater destinations. And, you know, we've been fishing in September. I always do a trip up to the Kenai River in Alaska, and we've been doing that for 8 of the last 10 years, and we'll go back to September for the 9th year, where we fish for silver salmon, rainbow trout, Dolly Varden, and Arctic grayling. Certainly fishing for bonefish and trevally. And I think we're going to get a chance to talk about some of the freshwater fishing also available on the Hawaiian Islands, but we do that year-round. And I've been fortunate enough to take groups to fish for peacock bass down in Brazil and to fish for the saltwater species in not only the Bahamas but also Belize and then all throughout the contiguous 48 states. So that's what I'm doing with my time in terms of Grand Slam fly fishing destinations. You can find me on the internet at grandslamflyfishing.com, and if anybody has any follow-up questions, they can always call me at 808-224-2035, which is my my Hawaii phone number. So 808 area code, a lot of people recognize that.
Okay, want to give that both the website and your phone number out again one more time?
Certainly, yeah. It's www.grandslamflyfishing.com, and the phone number is 808-224-2035.
Great, great. Well, while we were talking, we got a question in from, I guess, Tu Tran. Sorry if I didn't pronounce your name properly, but he's in Albany, New York. He says, how does bone fishing in Hawaii compare to the more well-known bonefish destinations such as Christmas Island, the Bahamas, and the Seychelles? I don't know if you've fished any of those others. Or?
Two of the three. I love to go to the Seychelles. And my guess is that certainly, as we talked about in the first segment, I would get a chance to catch the same species of Pacific bonefish or one of the two Pacific bonefish that are around the Hawaiian Islands. The Christmas Island experience, I think the parts of fishing in the Bahamas and that experience, and certainly I've done a decent amount of bone fishing also in Belize. And what you find, what I tell people is what you'll find different about Hawaii bone fishing is you will not have the bonefish come up on the flats or even cruise along the edge of the flats in what we call some of the channels that we fish off some of these flats in large, large schools, not very often. I won't say it doesn't occur. We have certainly cast into schools of 50 bonefish in some deeper water, Kaneohe Bay. There's what's called a sandbar that, as the tide changes, a portion of that comes completely out of the water and is a dry sandbar during the tide cycle. And then at high tide, there is a large portion of this sandbar out in the middle of the bay that is still in 2 to 3 feet of water. So you can wade out there, and it's a great habitat. And certainly as you get to the edges of that where the water gets deeper, you can cast to schools of bonefish, anywhere from 10, 15 bonefish on up to the 150 or 100 that you might see frequently coming along the mangroves and why they call it nervous water. In the Hawaiian Islands, in my experience over the last 10 years, almost all of your fishing, sight fishing to bonefish, will be to singles or doubles or triples in groups of like 4 to 6 or less bonefish at a time. They are larger. They just tend to cruise and hunt in smaller groups, if not in a solitary way.
Okay. Okay, great. Question from Jim Wright in the Carolinas. He says, how long have you lived and guided in Hawaii? I think you've already addressed that. He says, I hear there are lots of spots that local guides would only know. And I don't know really, you know, what his question is about that. I guess is, you know, if you go with a guide, are you going to get into spots that are better or, you know, secret or
right.
kind of thing? So I think that's what he's looking for.
Yeah, that's a fairly common question. I would answer it this way. Well, first of all, I lived on the island full time for 3 years while I was assigned there. I've fished in the Hawaiian Islands for just over 10 years. My wife is still on active duty, so I'm not on the Hawaiian Islands full-time now, but I am providing guided fly fishing trips year-round on the Hawaiian Islands, and I guide whenever I'm back there. The other thing I would say is that not unlike many other fisheries, whether they be freshwater or saltwater, I think that you have guides that develop a series of places that they're comfortable in fishing. And I think that what you might find, especially in bone fishing on Oahu, or even on Kauai, is that there are a couple beaches or a couple flats that'll get names, that those names will start appearing on bulletin boards and people will talk about, I fished near the Air Force Base, or I fished up near up near Princeville on Kauai. I fished a beach there. And there are actually more places besides that if you go fish with a guide, you might get into some places that you not only have less fishing pressure, but may have less snorkeling, kite sailing, just less pressure from people in general, and they might be a couple of those hidden gems. And so there are some places I know of on both of those islands that they're not necessarily that the guides are trying to keep them secret. It's that the guides know that there are many other places they can take you to go fish other than just the tried and true couple, two or three places that a lot of people are hearing about. I don't know if that answers Jim's question.
Yeah, no, I think so too. And I think always, when you go halfway around the world to a fishery, I don't care where it is and you're not familiar with it, we always talk about this on shows, you know, you should get a guide because you'll end up waste. I remember the first time I went to the Keys and I thought I'd just go and I'd be able to just wade, you know, find some flats and wade. And I wasted a whole day down there, you know, screwing around by myself. And because I didn't know where to go and I wasn't with anybody that knew what they were doing. And I just wasted a whole day, you know, and didn't catch a fish, you know. So I think especially in the salt and especially when boats are helpful, that always makes a difference. And the thing about I've always found with guides is they're very – anxious to get you into some fish. So they're going to take you to places where they, you know, where they score best.
Absolutely.
And, yep. Whether they're secret or not, who cares? You know, it's their goal is to get you into fish so that you go tell other people about all the fish you caught so that the other people will come and use their service. So it's a win-win as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. You know, the question I always get is, you know, what can I expect? How many fish am I going to catch? And that is, as any guide knows, that's a loaded question because there's a lot that I don't know about, whether it's on whether I'm answering an email or a phone call or I'm talking to somebody face-to-face. Before we start our day, I don't know how the fish are going to react. I don't know what the weather is going to do that day. I don't know your casting ability. And I don't know, you know, just there's a myriad of factors that are going to come into play. We may see 25 fish, and you may cast the 10 of them and get takes and miss all of them. But I don't know that at the beginning of the day. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot of factors there. And I tell people, I say, when I first took up that saltwater fly fishing, I went out with a few folks there. I went out for 12 straight days, not 12 calendar days, but 12 times in a short period of time, less than a month and a half. I went out fishing 12 times before I landed and released my first bonefish. Now, I spooked a lot of fish. We cast to a lot of fish. I went out days where I didn't see a single fish, and my guide, you know, saw plenty. So, and the other thing is, you know, Hawaii is a destination, whether it's for vacation or business. More times than not, the people that are asking to go out on a day fishing there are trying to squeeze in a day or a half a day as part of at the end of a business trip or in the beginning and in part of a family vacation. And I tell them, you have to be – it's fishing. You have to be prepared that we could do everything right and you could still get skunked.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so, you know, that doesn't reflect badly on you or me or the fishery. It just is it's a law of averages that people are going to go out there and get skunked on days, and somebody else is going to go out and catch a permit the first day they ever catch to cast to a permit.
Right, exactly. Yeah, luck of the draw. Kind of. Looks like we answered both of Doug McLean's questions about where, what islands, and what flats or beaches. I think we've talked about that. Does Hawaii have mangroves like the Caribbean, or are they all sandy beaches? What's the coastal structures that we're going to find there that we're going to be fishing in?
The Hawaiian Islands do have mangroves, not a lot, but they are along the shoreline. There are some a little bit offshore, and so it's a mix. There are certainly places where you're going to cast, and you're going to see palm trees and sandy beach on the shoreline, and you're going to be out on flats. A lot of people, the other thing they don't know about the flats in Hawaii is they're not all sandy flats. There's a lot of coral and lava. We're going to talk about gear, I think, a little bit later on, but you need to have something on your feet. This is not a place to go wade barefoot, and so you need something on your feet, and that also makes it difficult to pick up the fish. You know, when you said, what are some of the reasons why you would want to hire a guide your first or second or maybe even your fifth time out fishing in Hawaii, the water, when the tide comes up, it turns a greenish-blue. And these fish tend to have a very dark green and greenish-gray back to them. They camouflage right in with the rock structure that's on the bottom and the fact that the water turns greenish-blue as the tide comes up. And it's very difficult to see this little torpedo that in the Bahamas looks like almost – you've probably witnessed it. It's almost translucent, silvery, and a lot of times you're looking at the shadow on the sandy bottom from a fish that you can't even see in the water column. Well, in Hawaii, they tend to turn greenish-blue, and they're very difficult to pick out. And so, you know, that's one of the other facets about fishing the flats of Hawaii that makes a guide imperative to help you spot fish far out before you ever spook that fish and you can present a fly to them.
Okay. So the mangroves don't play an important role like they do in the Keys and other places, in Belize and so forth.
I wouldn't say they don't play an inconsequential role. If you see mangroves in the area that you're fishing, it's always good to fish around them, but they're not nearly as prevalent as you would see in the Bahamas or in the Keys.
Okay.
But they are prevalent on both – I mean, they are present on both Kauai and Oahu.
Okay.
And the south shore of Molokai as well. So they're present on all three islands.
Okay. Bill in San Carlos, California, wrote in, and he had asked the previous question. He says, when you and your clients are pursuing bonefish, are there other species of fish you catch that provide some level of sport? And he says, I'm not expecting it to be like the Grand Slam, basalt, but when snorkeling on the Big Island in Kauai, I've seen other fish species that seem large enough to provide sport on a fly rod. So are there other things we could fish for out there?
There are. The most common one is trevally. There are at least three species of trevally that have been caught on the fly line that I know of on the Hawaiian Islands, and there's at least, I believe, eight species of trevally in and around the Hawaiian Islands. So trevally is certainly an opportunity, but it's kind of hit and miss. It's whether or not the trevally are coming up onto the flats or onto deeper water at the edge of the flats.
Now, is that something that you would just, while you're bone fishing, you would see those fish?
Exactly. And then we would switch over, maybe possibly switch over to a slightly different type of fly, something that's going to maybe imitate like a clouser or a bait fish type pattern. We would certainly try to rig that up. Oftentimes, if somebody brings their own gear and they're fishing with their fly rod, the guide's got a second fly rod there as well. If that guide's noticing that there are trevally in the area, they're going to tie on a different fly so that another rod is rigged ready to go to give you a chance at trevally. And then there are tons of reef fish. Triggerfish, goatfish, needlefish, trumpet and cornet fish. You know, the most famous triggerfish on the Hawaiian Islands is the statefish, which is the humu humu numu apua'a. And that is the unofficial state fish. I've actually caught that on a fly rod and unfortunately didn't have a camera with me that day to take a photo of it. But so there's triggerfish and goatfish. There are pufferfish and there are barracuda. Frankly, if you're fishing for bonefish or trevally and you get a strike from a barracuda, more than likely with those sharp teeth, they're going to saw you off and you're going to be tying on a new fly. But there is the opportunity to fish for several other species of fish while you're over there. And there's times when you may be blind casting because you've lost the sunlight and you will actually, maybe you're varying your retrieve or something or where you cast, you'll just pick up one of the reef fish instead of a bonefish while you're out there casting. So it happens all the time.
Is there a, and you should know this given your business name, but is there a grand slam of the salt in Hawaii?
There is not. Based on Bill's question, I think maybe I ought to coin one. You know, the thing with grand slams is you really want to make sure that there is a reasonable opportunity to get those, whether it's within a day or a trip. And that would be interesting to try to put together for the Hawaiian Islands. When I do my trip up to Alaska, I kind of coined a grand slam, an Alaskan slam, and a Kenai slam, the four or five species you could reasonably catch on the Kenai River, for example. If you came home with a sockeye, a coho, a rainbow trout, and a Dolly Varden, which you could easily hook all four of those fish and catch and release those, then that would be the Kenai slam. And although the Kenai doesn't hold Arctic grayling, we've gone on trips up there where we've done a flyout, and we've actually caught grayling instead of sockeye, which normally when we go on our trip in September, the sockeye are pretty much all spawned out. And so if you catch a grayling instead of a sockeye, we call that the Alaska slam.
And those are
pretty reasonable pursuits to take on.
Yeah, I know. I think one day on the Togiak River, I caught char, dolly, and grayling all on the same half-mile stretch of the side tributary to called Cache Creek, and that was probably one of the best days we had fishing up there.
Wow.
That was my little slam for the day, which I thought was pretty cool.
I caught a snook and a bonefish on the same fly in Belize, and the guide said, what do you want to do next? Do you want to keep fishing for snook or bonefish? I said, no, let's go find a tarpon. I'm going to use this fly. And I want to catch. I need a hook. I don't care how big it is. I want to try to catch a tarpon with this fly. And I got snagged on some deep rocks where we were casting for tarpon, and I lost my fly.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk maybe for just a few minutes about some other freshwater opportunities that exist in Hawaii as well. So stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Front Range Anglers, the full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. in business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging on to their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rob Provo about bonefish in Hawaii. If you'd like to ask Rob a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many as them as possible on the show tonight. Okay. Rob, there are some, and I know you wanted to talk about this just a bit, so before we jump back into the bonefish, why don't you just kind of briefly tell people about the freshwater opportunities? Because, of course, so many of us, when we make a long journey on a vacation to go fishing, and if the weather doesn't cooperate or whatever, we always like to know, is there something else I could be doing? So a lot of people might not know about the freshwater opportunities in Hawaii, and maybe you could enlighten us there.
Sure. Yeah, there's certainly some freshwater opportunities on both Oahu and Kauai. Trout were introduced on the island of Kauai back in the 1920s, and I think I mentioned earlier that when I got stationed on the island of Oahu, I quickly found out that there was a Trout Unlimited chapter there, and I went to the first meeting, and I said, I've heard a rumor, there's trout here. And they said, yeah, they're over on the island of Kauai, and I got the whole history. And they were introduced, rainbow trout were introduced, and there are a couple streams where they are still, they're raised in a hatchery, and they're introduced and stocked in kind of a put-and-take fashion in a couple streams that are on the western part of the island. And there are also some streams that are pretty substantial height to get to. I think we had an earlier question of could you hike for bonefish? Well, this is, I call it extreme trout fishing, because the Trout Unlimited chapter goes and checks on those streams usually annually, and they take 3 to 6 folks, and they pack in their water and freeze-dried food and hike in several hours. We're talking some of the wettest swamp and rainfall areas and some rugged territory, but there are 3 cold water streams that still sustain rainbow trout from back in the 1920s that are naturally reproducing there. So there is a chance if somebody's got the urge to catch a trout in one of the other 50 states, and Hawaii is one they want to check off on their list. I think it's TUHI.org is the Hawaii Trout Unlimited chapter, and I got some great friends there. Stay in touch with them all the time, and they would be more than happy to answer people's questions about trout on the island of Kauai. And then the other thing is there's a freshwater reservoir. It's called Lake Wilson in the center of Oahu. And there are some ponds and some private ponds on both Oahu and Kauai where Hawaii is actually the only state where peacock bass, which come from the Amazon River Basin, I believe that's Florida and Hawaii, have had peacock bass introduced. And so there's a great opportunity to catch peacock bass on Lake Wilson on the island of Oahu. Some great operations guides that I work with there that have bass boats. They'll take you out with all the gear you need, and you can catch peacock bass from up to, say, 4 pounds. There's been a few fish that are caught a little bit larger than that, but we're not talking about the 8, 12, 15, 16-pound monsters that are being caught down in the Amazon. But they've been successfully introduced, and there's actually small and largemouth bass introduced in some of those fisheries as well.
Okay, great. So if the weather blows you out on the beach, then you can head inland and maybe do some fishing there. If that sounds good.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. We talked to Frank in British Columbia again, asked about other opportunities for other saltwater fish in the islands. He pretty much went through all that. We were talking about fishing for bonefish and things in that area, but are there things that are just maybe, you know, kind of more out of the box, like marlin or, you know, things like that?
I know of a couple guys that I fish inshore and on the flats for bonefish and trevally. A couple guys have experimented with taking some heavy 12, 14, and larger weight rods out and going deep water, blue water, if you will, for some of the pelagic right. species over there. It is very uncommon.
Okay.
It would probably be kind of a boutique-type specialty trip that we would have to set up and do some coordination on.
Right.
It's just not the draw
not standard,
the Central America billfish fishery and those kinds of things. But it's not out of the question. And somebody asked me about whether or not there were milkfish available.
Right.
And there are milkfish in the area. It's very uncommon to see them come close enough into shore to fish for them. But I won't say it hasn't happened because I've been out on days where I'm just out fishing with some friends, and we have seen some big shadows, and it was clear that that was a school of a few milkfish. It's very difficult, though, to get them to take a fly. I don't think that's uncommon in the Seychelles and some of the other places that people are fishing for milkfish.
Okay. Frank, again, in BC. Frank asked a lot of questions. He's very inquisitive.
All right.
So we appreciate that. He wants to know, is self-guided fishing a reasonable way to fish for someone with bone fishing experience?
It is. I just I caution people to understand that picking up the fish and spotting the fish is a challenge over there.
More so than days, in other areas.
Because of the darkness and the structure on the bottom and the color, the way the water will change color, it does make it more difficult. I had a lot easier time picking up bonefish on the flats in both Belize and the Bahamas because of the makeup of the bottom. Because a lot more clear sandy bottom or sandy bottom with turtle grass or things that you could pick the fish up when on a sunny day. And in the Hawaiian flats, you're going to be fishing along rocky coral lava structure on a lot of the bottom. It's a very hard structure, very rugged in a lot of places. So picking up the fish can be a challenge. The sustainable winds, I guess, are not much different than what you might find on a good day in the Bahamas with some good winds blowing, but that can be a challenge. But it's certainly, people ask me, can I do it myself? Can I go out with a guide one day and go out two or three more times over the next 2 weeks that I'm going to be here? And I say absolutely. But also don't feel upset that if you go out three or four days and don't get anything, then don't feel like you can't pick up the phone and call a guide back up and say, let's go out for one more day.
Yeah.
I learn something every time I go out and fish with somebody, no matter whether it's a guided trip or just fishing with some other friends. I always tend to pick something up. So.
Oh, yeah, you always do. Now, I don't know where this question will go, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway because I'm always concerned about commercial fishing and so forth and all over the world. But Bob Shirley in Corpus Christi, Texas, wrote in, and he says, there have been a lot of Internet postings and discussions, including graphic photos of, and he has in quotes, sustainable cultural fishing in Hawaii. That type of over-harvesting using very modern methods and equipment cannot be good for the potential future of sport fishing for bonefish in Hawaii. If you have any comment or thoughts you could share on the subject, it would be greatly appreciated. So do you know what he's talking about, first of all?
Yeah, Roger,
know.
I do. I do. It's harvesting fish from the sea is part of the Hawaiian local culture and has been for well before anybody ever thought about the idea of sport fishing for bonefish in Hawaii. So much like it is in any other place, I think there's a careful balance that has to be struck between this as a recreational fishery and recognizing the fact that it's part of Hawaiian culture. I think what Bob might be referring to is recently there have been some photos and some petitions and some efforts to highlight the fact that, many years ago people were fishing in very traditional ways, and they were taking fish, and they were taking only the fish that they needed. And I think there's the use of gill nets and some other things that are allowing just a large quantity of fish to be taken at one time with some fairly modern equipment. And so there is an effort underway right now to petition that bonefish in Hawaii, much like they have in the Bahamas and in Belize, to be recognized as game fish. And, to understand the importance that has economically to the state and to the islands and to the local businesses there. You know, when you book a bone fishing trip to Hawaii, you're getting a rental car, you're staying in some sort of lodging, you're buying food, you're buying possibly gear there, you're supporting a local guide, and you're doing all other kinds of things in terms of tourist activities, souvenirs, buying gas, and the list goes on and on. So having Hawaii develop a viable recreational and sustainable recreational fishery while not detracting away from the cultural significance of local Hawaiians fishing for their family for sustenance, I think that's an important, careful balance.
Mm-hmm. I know, in Belize, when I was down there, you know, that whole country did a turnaround based upon tourism. And a lot of the local fishermen who fish commercially turn into guides and quit commercial fishing and turn into guides and are actually making more money for themselves and their community by doing that than they were doing the commercial fishing. So
right.
It's exactly what you said. There's potentially a lot more money in the sport fishery than there is in local commercial fishing. So
right.
When I
first arrived on Oahu in 2002, there were less than a handful of guides that I knew about in any of the Hawaiian Islands. And now it would take both hands, both feet, and I would run out. I would still need a few more things to count on to know all the guides that are over there. But many of those guides, and even some of the guides that are showing up now are transplants from the mainland. And where I can, I always try to support local guides that are learning. They've grown up on the islands. They learned and wanted to be guides. And wherever I can do that, I'm supporting the local guide there.
Yeah. Let's talk about equipment. Frank up in B.C. again. He says, does one need to bring rod, reel, line, et cetera, to fish for bones, or will the guide supply equipment for you?
Right. All of our guided trips, rod, reel, line, flies is all included. I think that's customary. Certainly the providing of a rod and reel is customary for almost all the guide services that I know of over there. Whether or not some of the guide services charge an additional charge, I can't say that they don't, but I think most of the guide services over there include the use of a rod and reel, flies, and at least the lines. If not, they may charge a little bit for use of some flies. But we include all of that in any of our guided trips.
Okay. Yeah, I think you find that more common in saltwater guiding than you do in freshwater because it's just, especially for trout fishermen going to the salt, you know, you just may not have the gear, so they accommodate you. What kind of, if you are bringing your own gear, what weight rod and length rod would you suggest one bring for bones?
Right. If I was going to bring just one rod, I would bring a 9 weight. I tell people anything from a 8 weight to a 10 weight. 10 weight really is a large rod. I would bring a 10 weight if we're going to go for some really large bonefish, maybe on the South Shore of Molokai, or we're going to go for some opportunities to fish either inshore or right near the edge of the flats for some cruising trevally and bigger fish. So 8 or 9 weight is perfect. If you're going to just bring one rod, I would bring a 9 weight if you have it.
Okay. And many times you need that extra weight to work with the wind, I take it, too, right? Not just the fish.
An 8 or 9 weight really is, you need enough rod to, these bonefish, when I say when they're 4 to 8 pounds, on average, they're going to take you out into your backing two or three times before you get them close enough where you can, actually catch them and release them. It's not uncommon for them to take 200 yards of backing for you to reel them halfway back in and for them to go off on a second run, if not a third run. So you want to have enough rod so you're not exhausting the fish. But what I do get is questions. People say, well, I'm having trouble casting in the wind. Do you have any recommendations? And certainly it's common practice. A lot of people will recommend overlining. In other words, put a 9-weight line on an 8-weight rod or a 10-weight line on a 9-weight rod. And if that's what you think you need to help give you a little boost in casting into the wind, I certainly recommend, setting up your rig that way.
Now, do you, as far as lines go, do you use a specific bonefish design line? Or do you have any recommendations there?
Yeah, there's a lot of we just use a standard saltwater floating line for all of our fishing over there on the flats. I don't know of anybody that's recommending any sinking tip or weighted lines. It's not necessary, and it would actually probably make more noise and disturbance getting into the water. You really want a floating line and a light presentation when you're sight casting to these fish. So we just say a standard saltwater fly fishing line, floating line, and there's a lot of lines out on the market that will say that they're a bonefish taper, and that's exactly what you need. There are some saltwater lines that are rated as tropic lines because, you know, the line, you don't want the line to wilt in the heat.
Right.
Certainly I use those kind of lines when I went down to fish for peacock bass in the Amazon, and you don't need that at all. It's, you know, there's a great sign in the airport in Anchorage that says the record high temperature in Anchorage was 96, and the record high temperature in Honolulu is 95. So it's 84 and 72 almost every day of the year in Hawaii for a high and a low. So you really don't need that that tropic line.
Okay. Another question: how long of a leader should one use, and how heavy should the tippet be?
Right. Yep. If you buy a leader, a bonefish taper, then they come in 10 or 12 feet. Those are good standard lines. We tie our own a lot of times, and so as I tie them out in segments, I'll measure out two widths of my arm, you know, from tip to tip of each of my fingers, and that's about 12 feet, or it's maybe a little bit longer than 12 feet. So as I tie the leader out, it'll be no more than 12 or 13 feet. And then you don't want to have anything less than about 15 pounds on your tippet. I have spools of 15, 17, and 20-pound tippet, and I don't use anything lighter than the 15. And people say, well, that's too much. I want to go with with light gear, and that's great for the sport of it. But these fish are going to run you to the edge of the flat, and they're going to rub that line on coral, and you will lose so many fish that way. And you're fighting a big fish that, you know, you don't want to horse them in, but you want to get them in and not exhaust the fish. So I tell people not to bring anything lighter than 15-pound tippet.
Okay. And so you're not doing anything fancy, just get a bonefish taper, tie some. How much tippet did you say you used for?
The length of tippet. 15 pounds. The length of it? About 2 or 3 feet to start out
on the first
initial leader.
So you're running anywhere from like 15 to 18 foot leader and tippet
combination? No more than 15 feet, I would say.
Okay, you don't need any more than that? Okay.
No.
Okay. And Frank again asks, what about other personal equipment that you would recommend one bring?
Right. Yep. Besides your fly rod, reel, line, and flies, whether you're bringing your own outfit or the guide's providing it, I tell people there's two things you need to have. You need to have something for your eyes, polarized sunglasses, and you need to have something for your feet, which is either saltwater flats boots or neoprene booties, which are those, if you're not familiar with those are the booties you put under snorkel fins, whether you're snorkeling or scuba diving. Or there's a thing on the island called, and I think they're based on a Japanese design, they're called Tabi boots, T-A-B-I. And those are neoprene, zip-up on the side usually, but a very rugged rubber sole to the bottom of them. And you can get neoprene booties or Tabis for under $39.95 or $29.95, either on the island if you don't want to cart them over there, or you can get them at your local outdoor or sporting goods store. So you need something for your feet, and you need something for your eyes.
I usually the same booties I use for my diving and snorkeling, because a lot of times I've been on tropical beaches where I couldn't walk barefoot anyway because the sand was too darn hot. you got to have something on your feet. Okay.
Yep. And I wear a pair of ratty socks underneath them just so that I don't, you know, get sand down in there. I don't get blisters, something that, you know, any rubbing or anything that's going to cut my day short. I just wear a pair of socks, roll them down, you know, and have them underneath the flats boots that I'm wearing.
Okay, now here's a kind of off-the-wall question from Harsh Rana in India. And he wants to know, is there any call to use switch or spay rods in the salt water in the type of fishing that we've been talking about?
Yeah, I don't know of anybody that's using either of those. I'm kind of interested if Harsh has any stories of catching Pacific bonefish out there in India or in the in the Indian Ocean or near the Seychelles. We'd love to hear about that. But I don't know of anybody using those rods. There's not really a call for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm more familiar with the use of spey rods than I am switch rods, but I have not seen anybody use either of those in the Hawaiian Islands.
Yeah. Well, maybe if Harsh is listening, he can contact you and you guys can trade some information and learn a few things from each other on that. That might
absolutely. Roger, I would add one thing on the so we talked about mandatory gear, and then I would just kind of give an idea of kind of a packing list of some other things. The next question people ask me is, well, what should I wear? And I say, whatever you're comfortable with. You can wear a bathing suit, board shorts. You can wear long pants like you might wear on the front of a skiff out in the Caribbean because you want to also have some sun protection. So whatever's comfortable, you can wear a tank top. Guys will be out there with no shirts on sometimes if they're, you know, resistant to the sun. I don't recommend that, but or a long sleeve or short sleeve casting shirt or even a T-shirt, whatever you're comfortable with for the weather. You're in Hawaii, so you really don't need to bring a lot. I do get questions where people ask me if I need to bring my breathable waders, and I say absolutely not. You don't, there's no need for waders. You need flats boots, something to wear on your torso and your, you know, your waist, and you need a pair of sunglasses. That's really all you need. Now, some people like to use a stripping basket. If you have a collapsible one or one of those hard plastic ones and you feel like you need it, then or you like to use it, bring that along. If you want to wear a waist pack that maybe holds water bottles or sling on a lightweight backpack that you could throw a snack in or bottle of water or fly box and those kinds of things, those are all optional but not necessary.
Okay. Let's take another quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about flies and strategies and tactics. So stick with us, folks. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish for big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as the seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to his website at www.flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. Listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Rob Prevost about bonefish in Hawaii. If you'd like to ask Rob a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And, Rob, we did get a question in here from Daniel in Lake Havasu City. He says, you mentioned trevally. Are you referring to the giant trevally or some other species?
The three that I know that have been caught inshore and on a fly line are bluefin trevally, which are called omilu, O-M-I-L-U, omilu, the golden trevally, and either we're not sure if with a fly line if people are either catching giant trevally or what's called the thick-lipped trevally, but they're also referred to as ulua, U-L-U-A. The other thing you'll hear people talk about is papio. That's another Hawaiian term, P-A-P-I-O, papio. And papio is a general term used for small trevally of any species, usually under 10 or 5 to 10 pounds. So there's a chance to catch small trevally, but there's also a chance to catch large trevally. And like I said, there's about 8 or 9 species of trevally in and around the Hawaiian Islands, but the ones that come into shallower water that I know people have targeted and caught on a fly line are the bluefin, golden, and thick-lipped or giant trevally. Big-eye trevally, I think, are kind of in that same class.
Okay. Let's talk about food and flies for a minute. What type of food is available for the bonefish in Hawaii?
Right. So when I saw that that Bonefish and Tarpon Trust work that was done about tagging fish and migration, and I looked at the work that was done not only in the Atlantic and the Pacific, one of the other things I looked at is they often do stomach samples on bonefish to see what they're eating. And you would expect that it doesn't change all that much from the two. But the one difference I see is I think that there are some worms that are the bonefish are eating in the Atlantic and the Caribbean, that we don't see a lot of that, and we don't tie any patterns that really simulate any kind of aquatic worm. You're mostly catching them on shrimp patterns, mantis shrimp in particular, crab patterns, little sand crabs, tans and whites, and then bait fish, things like lizard fish or gobies, those kinds of things. That's the preponderance of what's in their diet, and that's the preponderance of what we're trying to simulate when we're tying flies.
Are there any particular named patterns that you could list for us that people could look up that you use regularly?
The most common one, I would say, is a mantis shrimp pattern. There's a lot of different ones that are out there, and so there's a lot of great patterns that if you want. The guides tend to put their twist on just about any one of those food categories, whether it be a crab pattern. So, you know, you can bring your merkin crab patterns and some of your other crab patterns, and I've seen some other ones that that work really well. The other ones are, I don't know that there's a fly out there that's necessarily named for this, but if you make a baitfish pattern and then you just take a marker and put some vertical stripes on it, it will look a lot like a lizard fish. And you can do a really light tan or kind of a brown, or even a browner tan, and then put those stripes on it almost with a Sharpie marker, and it'll look like a very appetizing lizard fish, and that's a pretty common pattern.
Well, you mentioned a merkin crab and so forth. Would you suggest, if you've got a box of bonefish flies for Belize or the Keys, to bring those along, or should you just get something locally?
No, I tell people always bring your own flies if you want to bring them. There's probably several in there that the guide's going to say, is going to point to and say, these will work well.
Okay.
Certainly you've already got them with you. If you decide to go out on a guided trip and then go out on your own the next day, you've got those with you. I never tell people not to bring their own flies. And a lot of times, you know, discussions over a fly box might inspire you to go sit down at the vise either on your trip or when you get back home, because what you've seen the guide using and maybe some things that he's highlighted about the flies in your fly box and some minor changes you might make to make them more applicable to the Hawaiian bone fishery.
Okay. Tim in Idaho Falls wants to know what your go-to flies are and what type of retrieve you use when you're using those flies. So,
right, yeah.
The mantis shrimp be one of your go-to?
The mantis shrimp is pretty common for me in particular. And then I tend to use some fairly common sizes of Crazy Charlies and Gotchas in tans and in kind of the white, you know, white and silvery, very light colored. And then the other color that seems to really work well is orange. So whether it's a little bit of orange in the mantis shrimp pattern or we've actually tied some fairly funky-looking flies that don't imitate necessarily any other fly pattern that's out there that have rubber legs on them and a little bit of orange. And oddly enough, those will work. For me, they work really well in situations where I need to do some blind casting. And that's when I get into deeper water. Maybe I'm up to my waist or my chest in water and I'm still casting because I've got a zone that I think is going to be holding some fish. Or maybe I've lost sunlight on the flats because it's partly cloudy and it's going to take a few minutes for that to blow through. I'll actually do some blind casting, and I'll switch over to this. Oftentimes I'll switch over to this fly that has a little bit more orange in it, and I'll pick up some fish.
Okay.
Tim asked about, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but I forgot that Tim asked about the retrieve. And so
right. That's,
you know, if you're sight casting, then a lot of times you're laying out a crab or a shrimp pattern and you're just wiggling a little. You know, there's a real stalking of the fish and planning your approach to get that fly far enough in front of them and which direction the fish might be moving, and then moving it and waiting for them to make a move over towards the fly before you move it again and do the strip set. When I'm blind casting, then I will vary my retrieve. I will cast out and start to retrieve right away, or I'll cast out and I'll count to three, then the next time I'll cast to seven. I'll let that fly sink in the water column, and then I will do a varying pattern over the course of 8, 10, 12 casts to different parts of the water and even in the same section of water, where I will do fast retrieves, then I'll do a couple fast, pause, let it sink. You know, it happens in trout fishing if you're fishing streamers. Oftentimes you'll start stripping a streamer back in, and the moment you stop it and it looks like it's an injured fish sinking in the water column, it gets hammered by a brown trout or something. So I will vary that retrieve in a myriad of ways and wait till I find something that works, and then I'll copy that pattern for a while.
Okay, okay. We've kind of touched on this here and there, but is that, do you feel it's better fishing using a boat or wading in the water?
I would say you can get to just as good a fishing and as many, if not more, places fishing by wading than you can a boat. And the few operations that I know that do operate with a boat charge more than a wading trip. So if you're looking for a guided trip, you're probably going to get about 50% more value by doing a wading trip than you are a trip from a boat. It's about 50% more expensive to do a day of guided fishing. For almost every place will charge you a rate, and it's for up to 2 anglers per guide. But because you can get to as many places, because I think that from a wading trip, you can plan out your approach to fish, especially when you're sight casting to fish. You don't have this bulky boat that you've got to maneuver around and be careful how you pull it and the water slapping up against it. And a lot of, you know, you stepping on the deck that could spook fish. If you're wading, you can control how softly you're moving and what direction you want to move around a fish that you might see tailing or in the water column that hasn't noticed you yet. I just think it's a better value, and you can get to as many, if not more, places wading than you can from a boat.
Okay, okay. Well, that's good to know, because Frank at least he asked about are there flats that cannot be reached by beach anglers. I would assume that there probably are, but you just gave an answer that was totally reverse of what I expected you to give, so I appreciate that.
Well, and I would add one more thing to Frank's question, is that there are flats and there are fishing areas, especially on Oahu and Molokai, that cannot be reached except by boat or kayak that are worth going to fish. So there are some flats on the south shore of Oahu that you need to take a boat out or kayak out to. You're not fishing from the kayak necessarily, and you don't have to fish from the boat. But to get to them, you've got to cross the small body of water. And then that sandbar I mentioned in Kaneohe Bay, if you want to go fish that, you've got to take a boat to get out there.
Okay.
Now, you could take a guided trip out there with a bone fishing guide boat, or there are many people that will just take you out, drop you off on the sandbar, and pick you up. Because that sandbar
real becomes, cheap, huh?
For a couple bucks, for $20 each way or something like that. Because that sandbar during the summer, or in good weather, I should say, all year round, it's a party destination. People go out there and snorkel. People go out there and barbecue. People go out there and have folk music, concerts. You can still find plenty of secluded areas to wade, but you can get a taxi lift, if you will, out to the sandbar. So to answer Frank's question, there are actually some places where you would want to take a boat. And the other thing I would add is if mobility or your fitness level is such that you think you feel more comfortable from a boat, by all means, you know, do a guided trip from a boat.
Yeah. Okay, lots of questions here to go, so we may have to speed up the answers. But how does tide play a role in Hawaii, and is there a best tide to fish in or out?
So the tide varies no more than a little over 2 feet in a tide cycle, which is great. It means on some of the shallow flats you can wade out a good 100 yards from the shoreline and feel safe. There are certainly flats where you want to fish right after low tide and fish the majority of the incoming tide, but there are certain places also where you want to fish before high tide and then the entire high tide back down. One case in point is the sandbar. If you want to go out and fish parts of that sandbar, you actually want there to be a lot of water up on parts of that sandbar so that the fish will come out from the deeper water and come up and hunt around on that sandbar. So that's not necessarily a low tide rising. It's before low tide as it's flooding up onto there and then even all the way past when the tide is starting to recede. So there's not a single answer to that question.
Yeah.
There's different flats that will fish better at different tides. But the good thing is the tide cycle only fluctuates about 2 feet.
Okay. What kind of casting accuracy does one need to have?
Very good casting accuracy when you're in a situation where you're sight casting. A lot of times when you're sight casting, the bonefish in really skinny water will spook. So you need to be able to lay that line out quietly, and you need to lay it out and lead the fish by 10 or 12 feet and wait for the fish to come to that. If they're tailing and they're actively feeding on the bottom, you have some chance to lead the fish and him not to even know that the fly's in the water and wait for him to cross that path and move the fly and get a strike that way. Blind casting, you can be much more inaccurate, if you will, because you're really just covering some water. Right. But I would also tell people, don't be intimidated so much by the casting that you think you've got to cast every time 80 feet. You don't. Because of that coloration of the water, I've had times where I barely wanted to throw the fly, one and a half lengths, the length of my fly rod, because the fish had come in so close to me and not noticed me yet because I wasn't moving. And I just then picked this fish up because of the coloration of the water and how deep the water was, and I got to be really careful about how much I move that fly rod. I just want to get a fly in front of him to get him interested. So there's some very short cast opportunities for bonefish.
Okay, yeah, that was a question came in on the Internet, Kerry and Dana Point. He says, how long of a cast is normal as to not spook the bonefish? So it really depends on the water condition and whether they've seen you or not seen you.
Right. The farther you can be away from the fish when you're sight casting, if you can cast accurately and quietly in a real soft presentation at 40, 50 feet, you're going to have a better chance of getting a fly out there that's not going to spook the fish before you have a chance to even move that and try to entice the fish for a strike. But in other conditions, the wind might be blowing, it might be choppy. You can cast shorter and you can be a little less accurate with your cast.
Arnold in Los Angeles wrote in and asked, can blind casting be more effective than sight casting in some areas? If so, which ones?
All right. That's my kind of question, Arnold. I don't get this question all the time, but you mentioned at the top of the show some of the presentations I give about bone fishing in Hawaii, and I talk about sight casting versus blind casting, and there are a lot of people that contact me and they say, I only want to go out and I only want to sight cast. And my response to them is, I only want to go out with you and I only want to take you to places where we can sight cast, because that means that the light's really good and I'm seeing fish to point out to you and probably the wind's down and, you know, we've got great conditions. But if you want to maximize your time out there and you want to maximize your chance to get a bonefish, you've got to be willing, I think, to incorporate some blind casting. And what I tell people is, while you're casting and while we're walking the flats, when you have good sunlight and you can see the structure on the bottom and you can see the deep channels versus the shallow areas, be thinking about how are the fish using this so that you can blind cast smartly when you lose the light. In other words, I know there's a channel over there. I can't see it anymore now, but I'm gonna cast along the edge of it because the fish don't care if the sun went away. They're still cruising along that same rocky structure along that channel, or they're down in the deep depression kind of working their way in and onto the flat and off to the flat. And if you can put a fly in front of them blind casting, you got a chance to catch that fish.
Yeah, good. Any tips on fighting bonefish and also any need to worry about sharks when fighting a fish over there?
Oh, those are good questions. I would say fighting bonefish, obviously, nine times out of ten you're going to be doing a strip set. And so you want to point the rod at the bonefish. You want to, if you're predominantly a trout fisherman, you want to avoid the tendency to raise your rod until well after you've set the hook. Maybe you've pulled against the fish one or two more times to make sure that hook is firmly set in their mouth. And you really want to practice good line management to make sure that that line is not wrapped around you, your stripping basket, the strap on your waist pack or your backpack or the fly reel. You get that line out there, get the fish, let them run. Don't give them a lot of free line, but let them run and get on the backing and fight against that backing. And then be prepared that you're going to get some, if it's a bigger fish, you're going to get him halfway in and he's going to go on another run or two. And I'm sorry, the second half of that question was,
about sharks as...
Yes. So that's another popular question I get, and I've never seen a bonefish taken by a shark after it's been hooked up. So in my experience over 10 years, that's not a big problem. I have been bonefishing in the Bahamas where I've seen sharks ambush a bonefish that's on the line. I would say it's not nearly, if not not at all, the problem that it is in some of those other fisheries. But the other question I get is, do you see sharks when you're out fishing? And on some of the flats, I have seen black-tip reef sharks. They keep their distance. I always am aware of where they are, and anytime I've even cast a fly in their line, it usually spooks them, and they head off into deeper water. So, but people ask me, have I been out there fishing and seen sharks? I have seen black-tip reef sharks fishing.
Now, we just got a question in. Daniel in Lake Havasu City is wanting to know about catching a mako on a shark, a mako shark on a fly. Wouldn't you tell him to go see Conway Bowman in San Diego?
I would.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's who you want to go to, Daniel, if you want to catch a mako shark.
Absolutely. Conway and I first met at a fly fishing show. Then he took me fishing for mako sharks, and I don't know if he's going to hold the event this year, but I've gone to his last 2 years of his flying mako catch and release tournament, and that is a thrill. And then, yeah, of course, as you mentioned, he and I got to do he's hosting Fly Fishing the World, and I was able to host him and the crew for a show late last August, and it just aired this March, and it's now in reruns on the Sportsman Channel, I believe it is. But I've had a chance to take him bone fishing and peacock bass fishing on Hawaii, so. That's who he wants to go see is Conway, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's not too far away from you, Daniel. And we did a show with Conway on shark fishing, so look it up in our archive and you'll find it in there. And also his contact information. I think there's a video there too. So, that'll blow your mind. We've run out of time here, but real quickly I want to end the show with what are some of the biggest mistakes you see fly fishers make when they're fishing for bonefish?
I would say they set their expectations too high in terms of what's going to be a successful day for them. And I tell people, if conditions are good, weather-wise and what we're going to be able to see in the water, we're likely going to see 20 to 30 to 40 fish, maybe more. We're going to see a lot of fish. You're going to get a chance to fish or to cast, hopefully, to 10, 15, 20 of them. Hopefully, you're going to get 5 or 6 takes, and if you can hook and fight and bring in and land and release 1 or 2 bonefish, anything more than one, then you've had a successful day. People kind of are worried about that, but I say you're catching a bonefish that might be the first bonefish you hook and land and release might be 9 pounds, and there's people that have fished all their life and haven't caught a fish that big. So that's one, and the second thing I would say quickly is practice your casting in the wind. And if you can't double haul and you're intimidated by the coordination of the double haul, practice a single haul, because a single haul with the wind at your back will help you get started and then work on your double haul from there.
Great, great. Yeah, and practice in the wind, not on calm days.
Right. And we tell people, if you want to, we'll meet you at the beach the day before for an hour, 35, 40 minutes. And why we say the day before is, don't use up your time when we're going to go out and fish the tide that we've planned for. But let's go down the beach edge or a little city park on either Oahu or Kauai, and let's cast a little bit in Hawaiian wind. And you may cast in wind, you know, Thursday afternoon, and your trip's Friday, and it's dead calm. But better to be prepared for the wind then. Even if, you know, how many people, you know, cast in their backyard when it's windy? That's the last thing they think about. But they're on the island. Come out and cast for 30 minutes. Let's work on your technique. And then let's get you on the water the next day. Now we can only focus on spotting fish and presenting them to them and hooking them and fighting them and releasing them. So.
Right, right, great. Well, we got to wrap things up here. We've actually gone over time here, but stick with us, folks, and we'll be giving away a 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine and a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So stick with me here a few more minutes, and we'll give those prizes away. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S, Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familyties.com. That's family, T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. So now it's time to give away our prizes, and the first prizes that we're going to give away is, the first one is for the Federation of Fly Fishers. Now, these are the winners for these are from drawings we do randomly from our show's registration database. If you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on any of these great prizes. If you're the lucky winner, we'll contact you after the show by email and get the information we need to so that we can fulfill your prize. The first one is for the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And that, if you want to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. And our winner for that is Doug McLean in Alberta, Canada. So, Doug, not sure if you've got a membership now, but if you don't, we'll get you one, and if you do, we'll get that extended for you. So congratulations, Doug, on winning that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And let me now I've got to work on here for a drawing for the one-year membership to the Fly Fusion magazine. And you know, to find out more about Fly Fusion, go to flyfusionmag.com. It's a great magazine out of Calgary, Canada, and lots of great articles, lots of great photographs. And our winner there is Gary Wagner, in British Columbia, oddly enough. So that works out. Gary, we'll get you fixed up with that one-year subscription to Fly Fusion, and congratulations. Now, I just clear my queue here. And, Rob, what I do at this point in the show is ask a question about something we talked about, and the first person to answer it correctly gets the $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder. So this is a question, spelling doesn't count here, so if you get it close enough for me to recognize, that would be good. What are the top three islands that you want to go bone fishing in Hawaii, and the order of preference, as Rob gave them earlier? So the top three islands and the order of preference that Rob gave them earlier. So, Rob, I'm going to ask you in a minute to make sure we get the right answer here. And so I'm
That's
checking.
Exactly the question I was hoping you would ask.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So our first answer is Oahu, Kauai, and Molokai.
That's correct.
That's correct. Yep. Well, the first person won, and that first person is Ted Hasselbring in Nashville. So, all Ted, right. Congratulations and good job there. I don't know if I could have answered that, but I just have to ask. So,
actually, we would have given credit to any one of those three. Just come over and fish one of those three. That's the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah. So, great, Ted. Congratulations. I got your email address here, so I will forward that on to the folks at Front Range, and they will send you out that gift certificate directly. So congratulations, and thanks for playing, everybody. Rob, hey, we really appreciate you being on with us tonight, and it was a pleasure to talk with you and learn more about fishing in Hawaii. New experience for me. I'll have to try it sometime. So thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you, Roger, and happy to answer questions anybody might have in the future if I didn't answer it tonight. And I hope we can talk about fly fishing again in the future.
Oh, good, good. Thank you. One note, I want to make everybody aware of our archive. If you haven't been into the archive, be sure you explore that. There are a couple of links on it on our homepage and at the bottom of one of our web pages. And in that archive, you're going to find all of our past shows, over 148 now, which you can search by keyword or keyword phrase like trout, tarpon, bonefish, Madison River, Hawaii, whatever. So go ahead and explore, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at all the different shows you'll find there, even one on Mako sharks. So enjoy that. Our next broadcast will be on July 11th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And our interview will be with Daniel Gallardo, and our topic for the show will be Tenkara, the traditional Japanese method of fly fishing. Daniel founded Tenkara USA in 2009 and has brought the traditional Japanese method of fly fishing, where a rod, line, and fly are used, to the U.S. Tenkara is all about fly fishing simplicity and mountain stream effectiveness, so join us and learn about Tenkara fly fishing and the strategies and techniques of using that system on our next show. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Royal Gorge Anglers, Front Range Anglers, and Flats Time Charters for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673, extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.